We welcome back to the program an old friend in a new role. Still writing about the Red Sox better than anybody out there, but these days doing it for MassLive.com. We welcome in Sean McAdam. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing great. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been terrific so far. I've only been, I'm winding down my second week here and haven't written a whole lot yet, but kind of getting up to speed with some training and orientation and all of that. And we'll be writing plenty going forward, doing some podcasts with Chris Cotillo. And it's a thrill to join such a big and growing staff as we have it at Mass Live, with a real commitment to covering the Boston pro sports scene. And delighted to be joining my longtime friend Karen Garigian, who was also brought aboard recently to sort of do the same job on the Patriots beat that I've been asked to do on the baseball beat. So it's a great time to come on board, and we invite people to check us out. I know that many of your listeners do, but MassLive.com.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Karen, a great get as well. Well, let's talk about the Red Sox. I got a little worried there with that four-game losing streak, but nice bounce-back wins against Seattle the last couple of nights.
Yeah, and, you know, even that four-game losing streak was somewhat misleading, as Alex Cora has pointed out. I mean, there were two games that they kind of had almost in the bag, with leads going into the ninth inning, and Kenley Jansen, who had been so dominant up until then, blows back-to-back ninth-inning save opportunities. So, you know, they, by all rights, they should have won that St. Louis series and instead ended up getting swept. But they did have two back-to-back, really one-sided losses, Sunday and Monday, and that, I think, woke them up a little bit, and a little bit of a team meeting called by Alex Verdugo prior to Tuesday. And the bats have come alive over the last couple of games with better starting pitching to boot. And now they have a quite challenging West Coast road trip in front of them, and it'll be interesting to see how they fare there.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that bullpen. Jansen hasn't been back out there. There haven't really been save opportunities for him, but also the bullpen tweaked a little bit. They DFA'd Ryan Brazier and then a couple new arms in the pen.
Yeah, they're certainly moving some bodies around. As you said, Brazier DFA'd and likely done with the Red Sox at this point in his career. Maybe a fresh start is what he needs elsewhere. And, you know, also losing Schreiber is a significant loss, as a guy that was definitely grouped into that high leverage situation in the seventh and eighth innings to help them get to Jansen. But they're also close to getting Cutter Crawford back, and that's a guy that gives them the ability to provide a little length, as Winkowski has done on occasion. So it looks like when they returned Ryan Sheriff to AAA today, it looks like that is a precursor move to activating Crawford for the start of the trip tomorrow in San Diego.
And Nick Pivetta moving to the bullpen as well, at least for the time being?
Yeah. You know, frankly, I thought that was something that could have happened back in spring training had everybody stayed healthy. He was, you know, they had seven candidates for five spots. And even though he took the ball every 5 days last year and led them in both starts and innings pitched, he wasn't always very effective, and he was particularly ineffective against AL East opponents last year. And really, if you go back to last year's All-Star break, he had an ERA of about six. So this was not any small sample size where a guy, you know, got into a rut or fell into some bad mechanical habits or issues with his delivery. He had not been really an effective major league starter dating back to the middle of last July. And frankly, I think that move could have happened sooner had there not been setbacks for Bayo and Whitlock and Paxton in spring training, which kind of delayed and impacted the start of their season. So Pivetta hung on a little bit, but along the way, you could kind of see this coming down the tracks, that when they needed to move somebody out to create room for somebody returning, it was likely that Pivetta was going to be the odd man out, and that transpired last night.
You mentioned Brian Baio, another pretty solid out him last night, starting to see some of the talents that the Red Sox have believed in with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got terrific upside. You've heard and read Pedro Martinez just on and on about how impressed he is with the quality of Baio's stuff, his makeup, his composure, everything that goes into being a successful major league pitcher. And if anybody knows all about those factors, it's certainly Pedro Martinez. And the thing that impresses me about Baio, Rich, is that, you know, you go back to last year, his rookie year, where he definitely took his lumps on a couple of spot starts where he got called up, but, you know, they had him work on some things. He went down back to AAA and did as they asked, and then he came back in September, having made those adjustments and pitching extremely well for the final month. And it's been a repeat of that this year. It didn't look good over the first three or four, but over the last four or five, he's got an ERA in the mid-2s, and you can see that considerable talent starting to emerge on a more regular basis.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. He'll go again tomorrow night, opening the series with San Diego, but what an encouraging first start in a couple of years for James Paxton last weekend.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he could, you know, kind of carry that forward. How much of that first one was all about adrenaline, maybe matching up particularly well against a lineup. We know that this guy has had a history of success at the major league level, you know, and to be able to have somebody like that can be a mid to back end starter with his experience and know-how and pitching in some big games, both in Seattle and New York, what a nice addition that would be. And it's been a long, frustrating road for him, not just the Tommy John surgery, but then at the end of last year, he had strained lat, which kind of put an end to any comeback hopes he had for September. And then this year, right away, he has the hamstring pull in spring training. That delays him for a couple of months, puts him, you know, a little further behind in terms of building up arm strength. But he announced himself in a big way over the weekend, and it'll be interesting to see against a very powerful lineup out there how his second and then third start, I think he'll get probably Arizona for the next one. So he's going to face some pretty good quality teams on the West Coast. It'll be interesting to see if he can replicate what he did over the weekend against St. Louis.
Now, they've got a while before they have to make a decision, but if Adam Duvall comes back as scheduled sometime in early June, what's the domino effect of that? Who ends up sitting?
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see how they handle it, because obviously you want Yoshida there for the vast majority of games. He certainly has been an offensive spark plug. Verdugo is enjoying his best season to date. You want him in there most times, and it's hard to make the case that Jaron Duran doesn't deserve pretty much an everyday spot. So, you know, one of the things I could see perhaps happening is that, depending on what they get out of Casas, maybe you start seeing more of Turner as a right-handed option at first base. Mm. And that, in turn, opens up the DH role for Yoshida more, and then, you know, you move either Duvall or Duran over to left, you know, one place left and the other place center. I could see that being, you know, a possibility. But even that, you're looking at maybe a third of the games, less than a third, where you're facing a lefty starter. That still doesn't lead to a path where all of those guys can play on a regular basis. But as the old baseball cliche goes, it's a nice problem to have more good players than you have spots for them in the field.
Boy, and they've had pretty good luck, too, patching the hole at second base with Valdez, and now Reyes hitting very well in his first few games with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on a lot of teams, that litany of injuries in the middle infield could have been very costly. And you think about, you know, what they're looking at and guys that are still on the IL. They're without Trevor Story. They're without Yu Chang. They're without Mondesi, who's yet to play a game for them. They have been without Arroyo for a stretch. You've had nagging injuries for Kike Hernandez, and when he's played short, frankly, he's been pretty sloppy with some errors. And yet, you know, it hasn't, on the whole, been anything that's cost them greatly, because they've had some depth moves like Reyes that have been able to step in. Chang, when he was healthier, he'll be back probably in, you know, another 2 or 3 weeks. So you talk about things getting crowded in the outfield. At some point, I don't think we're going to see Story until probably after the All-Star break, maybe a little sooner in early July, but that would be optimistic. But at some point, you're going to have Chang, Story, and Mondesi all available. And then, you know, what do you do with Hernandez? What do you do with Arroyo? What do you do with Reyes? But again, they're building some enviable depth here. And, you know, if some of the younger guys have to be optioned back or moved around a little bit, again, that helps with your overall depth.
Well, we know the Beatles told us money can't buy you love. Apparently, it also can't guarantee success on the baseball field. The Mets are seeing that, but also this Padres team with all their moves sitting right now at 20-24. What's wrong with San Diego?
Well, it's funny you bring up that topic, because I'm just in the process of writing my first Sunday notebook for Mass Live, and it's that very issue of the Mets and Padres, who just spent gazillions of dollars over the offseason with all these big contracts, whether it be, you know, Bogarts in San Diego and extensions for Machado, other stuff like that. You know, you see the Mets and what they've done with Verlander and, you know, going after Correa, and these teams have about $600 million in payroll combined, and right now they're both out of the playoff circle and under 500. You know, there are other factors there as well. There have been injuries to both teams. The Mets in particular have been hit hard there. But I think it's also a reminder that it's dangerous to put together rosters with almost this fantasy team approach. And I think that's particularly true out in San Diego. And Ken Rosenthal has talked about that a little bit over the last couple of weeks, where, you know, there is something to the construction of a roster, and it's not just going out and buying or trading for every shiny bauble who comes available. You know, they went and got Soto. They signed Darvish. They got Bogarts. They have all these terrific players, but how well do they fit together? And maybe it's just, you know, a number of different factors, and it's taking a little while and to overcome some injuries. You know, 40 or 45 games is hardly a full season, and there's plenty of time for both those teams to pull out of this disappointing first quarter that they've had. But as I said, it stands as a reminder that there are some other factors that go into constructing the proper roster, and it's not all about, you know, buying and jumping at every big star that becomes available and then figuring out whether they actually fit after the fact.
Sean McAdam, MassLive.com. Sean, great to talk with you. Congratulations again on the new position, Mass Live. Lucky to have you. We appreciate you making time for us, and we'll do it again very soon.
Thanks so much, Rich. Look forward to it.
Sean McAdam talking Red Sox on Downtown.